welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, your place for free, expert tennis instruction that can truly help you improve your game. Today's episode of the Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by SomersetSportsPerformance.com and also TennisTours.com. Go to TennisTours.com and use the promotional code ESSENTIAL for a discount off your next trip to a professional tennis tournament. And speaking of professional tennis tournaments, the French Open has just kicked off, and I'm going to be talking with my good friend Royce about how to watch professional tennis on TV and kind of get the most that you can out of your viewing experience. What can you learn from the pros? We're going to be talking about things such as footwork, shot selection, and attitude between points having to do with watching tennis on TV. So sit back, relax, and get ready for some great tennis instruction. My guest today on the podcast is a repeat guest. His name is Royce Sternquist. Royce, welcome to the show.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Royce has been helping me out a lot by posting on the forums. He's a certified tennis professional. He and I went to college together, and this will be his second time back on the show. And we discussed footwork on the last time that I had you on the program. Isn't that right, Royce?
Yeah.
As a good discussion, we did a whole show about footwork and enjoyed that one. So I'm glad to have you back on the show. And today, Royce and I are going to be talking about watching professional tennis on TV. And we're going to do this in honor of the French Open kicking off. Today's Monday. I always record the show on Monday. It's Memorial Day today. So I've been spending a lot of couch time watching the opening couple matches of the French Open today. Luckily, I've got DirecTV, and I'm able to kind of flip back and forth between courts. So I really enjoy watching. And while watching, I thought, hey, you know what? It would be a good topic to discuss with another pro how to watch tennis on TV and kind of things to look for so that you guys can get as much as you can from watching the pros, because clearly, they're extremely good at what they're doing. They're the best in the world. And who says that we can't go and learn and take cues from them and improve our own games by watching what they do? Royce, do you enjoy watching tennis on TV also?
I absolutely love it. I think it probably drives the wife crazy, but...
Yeah, it's good stuff. Have you watched any of the French so far?
I watched quite a bit yesterday, and unfortunately, I haven't been able to catch much today.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and get started. And I've got an outline here of five different main topics that Royce and I could touch on here. We're going to kind of see how things go and just get started with our first topic and just kind of go from there. So we may or may not get to every topic here that I have outlined. There's a couple that I definitely want to make sure we get to. But the first one on my list is patterns of play. And specifically, when watching the pros, Royce and I want you guys to make sure that you're paying attention to when, during what point situations, the pros are hitting down the line versus cross court. And those are two very kind of general patterns of play or general directions that we can hit the ball either across your body and at an angle or straight ahead and down the line. And what I want you guys to watch for when you're watching the pros play is seeing what phase of play the players are in and when they choose to hit these directions, meaning are they in a defensive position during the point? Are they in a neutral position where they're just kind of, they're in balance. They're not defensive or offensive. They're kind of right behind the baseline and in balance and can choose to do just about anything they want. Or are they offensive moving forwards? It's an easy shot and they're trying to attack. And Royce, in your opinion, how did those different phases of play match up with different directions that the pros are able to hit, using just kind of down the line and cross court as our two general directions?
Well, I think that the cross court shot is going to be a much more consistent ball that you see a lot of lot of pros just using, or anyone should for that matter, just be hitting the ball cross court. Just whether it be a neutral ball and or a defensive ball, you know, obviously you have the most distance, you know, therefore it takes the most time, you know, and just making sure that you're giving yourself the opportunity to then when you get the short ball or whatnot, to be able to step on the gas and become aggressive with a down line ball.
Yeah, it's important to point out that cross court can easily be used in all three of those phases of play, whether it be defensive, neutral, or offensive. Cross court is a great choice. You know, depending on, there's a lot of other circumstances. We're kind of talking in generalities here. There's a lot of other things that could be going on during the point, as far as your positioning, your opponent's positioning, your opponent's strengths and weaknesses, etc. But in general, cross court is the percentage play. And Royce just pointed out that it gives you more court. It gives you a longer distance to hit with. And I've done the calculations on this. I believe in a singles court, the difference in distance between a down-the-line shot going directly down the line and a cross-court shot is something like 4 feet of extra space. And that's substantial. I mean, that's a large margin for error between those two targets down the line and cross court. So that's reason number one why it's safer, and the other one is that the net is lower when you guys hit cross court. So in all three phases of play, cross court is generally the safe play because of the greater margin for error that you get. So what about hitting down the line, Royce? When would it be appropriate or acceptable strategically to go down the line, seeing as it's kind of a lower percentage shot?
There are a few times that I try to tell people that it's okay. One, always almost 90-95% of the time approach down the line. Anytime they can step into the court about 2 to 3 steps, that at that point, that ball that's being hit to them isn't penetrating the court, that it's, you know, it's in the court and they can step up and drive it. But I don't mind that shot. Also, in terms of being able to open up the court and open up spots depending on your opponent's strengths and weaknesses. You know, that if they, as a right-handed player, have a weaker forehand and want to open that up, you know, you can hit a ball where you're not necessarily trying to hit a winner down the line, but you're trying to just open up and get that ball to the forehand so you can elicit a forehand-to-forehand cross-court rally and attack for weakness in that respect.
All right, so the different situations that I'm hearing you talk about are basically when either the player is attacking. You said when they're stepping inside the baseline and it's off a weaker shot that hasn't penetrated into the court. And the other situation you just gave was changing direction to kind of give you an advantage or an upper hand in the pattern, being mostly cross court, hopefully a lot of the times, to give our players an advantage in a pattern being played, maybe to go forehand to forehand after having just hit a backhand. Trying to hit that down the line to get into a forehand rally cross court. That's kind of a neutral, or actually the first one was an offensive situation where a player is stepping into the court. The second one sounded like kind of a neutral position. What about defensive? Would you ever suggest to somebody to go down the line when they're in a defensive position, when they're on the run?
Only if they're masochists and want to run. Are incredibly fast, which I am both to some extent. That for me, it was one of my shots to just try to hit a loopy ball back deep to down the line. I don't know why, but I like the process of running and trying to frustrate my opponents. But it's generally not a well-conceived shot.
That's the first time I've heard the word masochist used in a tennis instructional environment. I like that, Rice. That's good. Guys, and here's what he's talking about. When you're on the run, we're assuming that you're already over to one half of the court or the other. Your opponent has just hit a shot where you've had to really hustle to get to. And so you're over to one corner or the other, to the right or to the left. And what Royce is talking about when he says masochist, meaning you enjoy punishment, when you go way out to one side or the other and then hit down the line, if you don't finish the point on that shot, your opponent has not only a wide open court because you had just run all the way over to one side or the other, and so the other side of the court is going to be open, but having hit down the line, you're giving them a cross-court shot to hit to the opening that you just left open. And so that cross-court shot is going to travel away from you. Whereas if you hit cross-court after running way out to one side or the other, they have a down-the-line shot to try to hit to the opening, and that shot's going to stay even with the sideline. And so you're not going to have to run as far to get to that next shot. So what Royce is describing is just kind of an angle game. If you guys have to hustle way out to hit a shot and then hit down the line, it better be a great shot. It better be a heck of a shot. Because if it's not, your opponent has a cross-court angle to really kind of finish you, unless you're just extremely fast, like what Royce is talking about, and you're able to hustle all the way over to the other side, at which point, if you hit down the line again, well, you're just kind of digging yourself into a bigger and bigger hole. Is that what you're talking about, Royce?
Yeah. Even, you know, whether or not that first ball that you're trying to hit down the line, whether or not you even try to hit that as a loopier ball to give yourself a little bit of time, regardless of, you know, if you're trying to hit a winner or not, that you're being put on the run, and that's not a winning proposition.
Right. So guys, in conclusion, watch the pros. You will rarely see them go down the line when they're way out on the run, unless they're pretty much just going for an all-out winner. And by the way, going for that winner is an extremely tough shot because, again, the court is shorter, it's not as long, the net is higher, and so it's just a difficult shot to hit. It's not to say you won't see top-level professionals go down the line, but they're going to be a little more selective about it as opposed to cross-court, which is the more percentage play. Royce, anything else to add to that? Just cross-court versus down the line in general as it relates to the pros before we move on?
No, the one thing I would say within this context is the pros will change direction of the ball much more frequently than rec players should. You know, and that's the one thing that, you know, I wouldn't want someone to be able to watch a professional player and then go, hey, let's change the direction of the ball as often as they do, you know, because that's just not a smart strategic play. You know, just keep hammering that cross-court ball, then look for the openings where you can truly hit a down-the-line ball.
Yeah, and I completely agree with that, Royce. Guys, if you're listening and you're below a strong 4.5 NTRP level player, you should be changing the ball very rarely. If you want to play a high percentage tennis, you can play a very generic type of strategy and play very good tennis at a 3.5 or a 4.0 or even up to a 4.5 level of play. I mean, really at 5.0 also, you're going to have opponents at that level that are more easily going to be able to change direction. And so could make you pay for playing a very, you know, a type of strategy that's very easy for them to predict. However, if you guys simply just keep it cross court, just cross court, cross court, cross court, and then wait for a short ball before you take it down the line, you're going to be very successful doing that. Even if it's predictable and your opponent knows it's coming, it's just a high percentage strategy to play, and you're going to find yourself winning a lot of points that way. But Royce, you're correct. Obviously, the pros are, you know, they're good enough that they can change direction more often, and that they're playing more complicated strategies than what we would typically recommend to our students. Would you agree with that?
Oh, without question.
Yeah. Right. Well, moving on, let's go to our next topic. And this is somewhat a controversial one, but I want to throw this out there because, you know, it's during a Grand Slam, and guys, you're going to watch women's tennis and you're not going to see the patterns that Royce and I are talking about as often as when you watch the men, watch the professional men play. So Royce, I want to talk about the difference in general between women's professional tennis and men's professional tennis. And I'll give a couple of thoughts on this first, and then I'll pass it over to you. And I was just having a conversation with Brian in the forums about this under the French Open forum topic at the forums at EssentialTennis.com. And we were discussing the differences between men and women. But in general, currently, you know, within the last, probably within this decade, the last 9 years, women's tennis has started getting very powerful, very strong, very flat. It's been kind of a just a slugging match back and forth. And because of that, unfortunately, the strategies being played back and forth are not very high percentage. You will see a lot of down-the-line shots hit in most of the women's tennis matches. You'll see very flat and straight shots. And the combination of those two things results in a lot of mistakes. If you guys look at the stats between your average women's match and your average men's match, you'll see a lot more unforced errors on the women's side per set than on the men, because the men are playing a little bit safer tennis. The points are lasting a little bit longer typically. Not always, but this is on average I'm talking about. Royce, what do you have to add to that? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that without getting initially into the patterns of play, so to speak, that just women don't hit the ball with as much spin. I mean, as you said, it's a flatter game. I can't say rarely, but you don't see women hitting kick serves as often as a lot of the men. You know, that their serves are, especially their second serves, are more of a slice type second serve. You know, so you see a lot of differences within that context, and that it sort of dictates a lot of the styles of play.
Yeah, I agree. And what about differences between just in general hitting down the line versus cross court? Do you feel that I'm on with my thoughts, Sarah, as far as women hitting down the line a lot more often?
Oh, without question. You know, the women. And thank you, Ian, for painting me into a corner with this.
no problem.
Women. Their foot speed generally isn't as fast as the male pros. And as a result, you can get away with hitting lower percentage shots that aren't as effective or wouldn't be as effective against a male hitting against another male. And that's not to say that it's wrong. It's just it works within the context of their points and their matches. So, you know, it is what it is.
Sure. And I said before, guys, this is a generalization. Although on average, women are hitting much flatter. They are hitting lower percentage shots on average compared to the men. There are exceptions to this. I enjoy watching Yankovic quite a bit. She, in general, plays a very smart type of tennis. I guess you could kind of call her a counterpuncher or a... not a retriever. I mean, I wouldn't call her a defensive player, but she definitely likes to feed off of her opponent's errors, which is why she's been successful in the last year or so. But she'll play high percentage tennis. I enjoy watching her play. Hingis also had a very well-rounded game, and she was content with playing high percentage play and allowing her opponents to make mistakes. Can you think of anybody else, Royce, on the women's side who typically plays a little bit higher percentage play?
You named quite a few that I would definitely agree with. The two that come to mind, while not completely playing a higher percentage, would be both Clijsters and Justine Henin.
Yeah.
They both did a much better job, or seemingly a much better job, as to, you know, keeping the higher percentage ball going and then stepping it up when they had the opportunity. You know, and again, they I would venture to guess that's one of the reasons why they were up at the, you know, at the top of the rankings, you know, versus, you know, the 10 to 15 range.
Right. Yeah. And it was, I enjoy with both, or rather I agree with both of those as well. Henin and, Clijsters. And what you would see out of them was more variety of play. And Royce was just describing, they would play a high percentage ball back and forth, back and forth. They would wait for an opportunity that made sense strategically or tactically, and then they would take their shot. Then they would go for it, as opposed to so many of the other top women today. Serena Williams certainly comes to mind, who kind of just has one speed, and it's just crush the ball, and that's her speed. And that's it. And so she will overpower opponents very often who just can't handle that pace. But when she plays somebody who is able to hang with her, oftentimes she would just beat herself. And seeing her try shots like volleys or drop shot, well, I can't say I've ever seen her try a drop shot really, but shots that require more touch and feel, you would often see her miss seemingly easy shots because, you know, she kind of just has one strategy, and that's beat the crap out of the ball. And Royce and I are trying to be tactful here and not sound like we're really biased, but, you know, I'm just trying to give some facts. And this is just kind of how the patterns of play are between men and women. And this is something else you guys can watch for when you're watching the French Open or any other tournament on TV. You'll see these differences and look for them. Look at the situation that players are in points and see where they aim. And you can learn a lot based on whether they make it or miss it, or basically how it works out for them. See if they win or lose the point, and you can start to get a good feel for what's smart and what isn't as far as strategy is concerned. Anything else to add to that, Royce?
I think you covered it pretty well, buddy.
Okay. Well, let's see. As always, our topics are running long. We've still got three more we could talk about here. There's one I want to save for last that I really want to get to. Right now, let's talk a little bit about footwork. And Royce and I just talked about this a couple weeks ago. Two shows ago, I believe, was our footwork show. And I mentioned briefly about watching one player at a time. And this is something I want to remind you guys of. Because the French Open is on now, there's going to be a lot of opportunities to watch tennis. Rather than watching the ball go back and forth, which is how most people watch tennis, I would assume, to follow the point, take a couple of minutes and watch each player one at a time and see what they're doing with their feet. Don't follow the ball back and forth. Just watch one player. And Royce and I would really like to see you guys notice the split step. You referred to it as a split sprain. I'm sorry, split sprain, I believe it was, Royce?
Yes.
Watch for what they're doing with their feet as their opponent makes contact with the ball, and watch for the big steps, the little steps we were talking about. Royce, why don't you go ahead and take that? What other types of things would you like our recreational level players to watch for in terms of footwork when they're watching the professional players on TV?
Well, just in terms of watching the split step, but also just try to watch how balanced they are when they're hitting and the ease at which they're, one, getting to the ball, but also the recovery. That if you're able to maintain that balance, you know, as the pros are, then you're going to facilitate just a lot of extra balls back, and, you know, and get yourself into a good position for the rest of the point. And, you know, there have been a few people that have said, you know, that there are 5-0 level players, 4-5 level players even, that could hit forehands and backhands as well as a lot of professional level players, which I don't doubt is true when they're not moving. You know, when you're,
sure.
You know, but you seldomly have a ball come at you where you don't move. You know, and that's the thing where the pros, for the most part, really make up, you know, and just create a huge fissure between everyone else and themselves. They're able to move and hit so much better than anyone else playing. You know, so it's really trying to notice just how they hit in terms of how they're getting over to the ball and then how they're recovering back and how that facilitates one shot to the next.
Yeah, I completely agree that footwork is an underrated part of what people pay attention to when they watch the pros. Royce is correct. There's, and even above that, I mean, 4.5, 5.0, yeah, and even like college level players. A lot of these level players that we're talking about, upper level players that aren't professionals, they've got the strokes when they're just standing there and they're getting an easy shot. But what really makes a world-class tennis player is the ability to, as Roy said, move and hit at the same time and be able to keep their body in balance, move themselves with poise around the courts, and be able to execute that high-level swing. Doing both at the same time is very tough, and you guys can learn from watching the pros how to do this, or at least see what it's supposed to look like and try to emulate that. I think it's an underrated part of the game. Everybody goes online to watch swing technique, you know, see what Roger Federer's forehand looks like in slow motion, etc. I don't see anybody talking about how they move or how they position themselves. One of my favorite players to watch is Andy Murray. His anticipation is so good and he moves so efficiently. It almost doesn't look like he's trying half the time to move his feet. He just has kind of a sixth sense for how to move his feet and how to position himself. Do you have a favorite player to watch, Royce, when it comes to movement and that sort of thing?
Federer.
He's always relaxed as well.
You know, he looks like a gazelle running, yeah. You know, and moving on a court that it's just with such ease that he's able to get over to a ball and hit.
Yeah, there's kind of two different sides of the spectrum. You've got your players like Murray or Federer who move very efficiently, very gracefully. And then you'll see guys like Nadal, who is incredibly fast, obviously, but he just kind of always looks like he's putting in a lot more effort, which he is. He's very focused. He's very intense. But it's kind of two contrasting styles. Nadal kind of more direct and more intense, and guys like Murray or Federer kind of more relaxed and more loose. And yeah, gazelle is good.
And the one thing within this too, you know, and this isn't necessarily a bad thing with Nadal's movement per se, but if you were to be able to watch, you know, Nadal on clay and or even just on a hard court versus a Federer or Andy Murray, Nadal knows that he's fast, and he uses that to his advantage.
Yeah,
you know, and Andy, you look at Andy Murray, you know, his anticipation is really, really good. You know, and it's not that he's not fast, but he doesn't have the same foot speed to make up for it. You know, and right. So you start to see some of the give and take as to, you know, where you as a rec player might want to emulate, you know, someone's footwork. You start to recognize, you know, where is my foot speed? How good is my anticipation? You know, I can work on my anticipation, et cetera. So you start to build your own game around those strengths and weaknesses.
Sure. All right, last topic before we wrap things up. I want to talk with you, Royce, about attitude and focus in between points. And this is something you rec players out there, you club-level players, and really, I mean, if you're a 5.5-level player, you know that this is something to watch also from the pros, and that is how they carry themselves in between points. Anybody can win a big point and, you know, kind of be relaxed, be cool and calm between points and just kind of gather yourself, get ready for the next one. But I want you guys to pay close attention to how the best players in the world act after losing a big point. And you'll see very contrasting styles of kind of attitudes and facial expressions and reactions between points, between your lower ranked professional players and your upper ones, like your top 10 players. Royce, why don't you comment on that? What differences do you see between kind of the most successful players on tour and the guys who are still making it, but lower, a little bit lower ranked? What differences do you see in their attitudes between points?
Well, first I'm going to go on record as saying Murat Safin is probably the best example that doesn't count within this.
Yeah, there's very few examples of that, aren't there?
You know, and so too does your racket throwing in. one of the biggest differences is if you watch the higher ranked players, they're they're cool and collected, you know, the majority of the time. You'll see some of the lower level players, not that they're not cooler, but they do get, and you, it is a slightly visible frustration as to if they miss a shot, you know, or whatnot, that they allow themselves to really kind of come up and come back down emotionally, or go down and come back up, whereas the higher ranked players are able to keep their emotions and their adrenaline almost in a box, you know, to try to minimize the effects, you know, so they don't have the highs and lows.
Yeah, and that's a good way of putting it, is kind of seeing the differences, the net difference between the ups and downs that a player might have. And everybody's going to have ups and downs throughout a tennis match, whether it's close or not. You're going to make some great shots during a match. You're going to make some terrible mistakes during a match. It happens to everybody. That's just part of the game. How well you control your emotions and how even you're able to stay is going to allow you to perform at a much more even pace and a much more even level, performance-wise and technique-wise, if you allow your emotions and your attitude to stay in check. And you're right, when you watch, you know, most of the top 10, you really see them have the exact same routine, the same expressions, the same everything after points, in between points, whereas very often lower-level players, you'll see a wide array of emotions, you know, being happy, being frustrated, being even. You'll see kind of the whole gambit, whereas your guys like Federer, you very, very rarely see him kind of project anything other than even. And it's just, that's focus, you know, as being able to concentrate and keep your thoughts in check.
Yeah, excuse me. And if, you know, you look at Andy Murray, for example, you know, with his rise to number three in the world right now, you know, that going back even when he was working with Brad Gilbert, I believe, you know, he'd still have those periodic outbursts, you know, and
sure,
in some ways that hampered his development and rise towards the top of the game, you know, that it's wasted energy. And as he's matured and everything, it's not that he doesn't still have some of those outbursts, but he's minimized them, you know, and that they're not as constant as they used to be. And it's a good thing to be able to see and to realize that, you know, even, you know, the difference between the number six player in the world where he was at one point or whatever, you know, and to where he is now, that can definitely help with improving your game.
I agree. All right, well, Royce, we're all out of time, buddy. Good discussion here on those four topics, and hopefully that gives you guys some things, some specific things to watch. When you guys are watching tennis on TV, you know, it's easy to just kind of get mentally relaxed, and, you know, certainly you should enjoy watching it and enjoy the high level of play, but you can do some homework during that time. You can watch the patterns that the players are using, whether or not they're going cross-court or down the line. You can watch their footwork and get some ideas how to move a little bit better and more naturally. And you can watch their attitudes and expressions between points and get a better feel of how you should be composing yourself during a tennis match to perform well. So all good stuff. Royce, thanks a lot for dropping by. And I know you're going to be looking forward to watching the French. I am as well. In fact, that's what I'm going to do as soon as I hang up with you. But thanks a lot for dropping by. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. Thanks, buddy.
That brings the Essential Tennis Podcast, episode number 67, to a close. Thank you very much for joining me today, and I hope that you enjoyed the conversation between Royce and myself about watching professional tennis. Two quick announcements before I sign off for today. First of all, if you haven't heard about it yet, I've started another audio show, and it's a live call-in show. It's called Essential Tennis Live, and it's a show format where you can participate, where you can interact with myself and the other pros at EssentialTennis.com. You can check out information having to do with that show at EssentialTennis.com/live. EssentialTennis.com/live. And our next live show is going to be this coming Sunday evening, so check that out. Secondly, to keep on top of what's going on with the French Open, make sure that you stay on top of the blog at essentialtennis.com/tournews. And we've got a couple of different writers there talking about the matches that are occurring every day. So keep on track of what's going, keep on top of what's going on by checking out the Tour News blog at essentialtennis.com. All right, that's it for today. Thanks again for joining me. Take care, everybody, and good luck with your tennis.